And then after that, we'll get into the next chapter, 18. They're printed, and while the Pancham and Nyaya presentation is going on, they're quickly being stapled so that we'll be able to distribute them to you in time enough to start our examination of this part of the Bhagavatam before the end of the class. So without further ado, can we just turn everything over to you? You want to sit here? Is there any blanket or anything? One day we're going to have this.
Everybody has this printed out sheet. If you follow along and identify the different points that we're going through, hopefully we can make a very attractive presentation of the logical Panchanga Nyaya, the way of analysing a purport versus section of the Bhagavatam. Okay, it's in the bag. So our thesis is that the age of Kali is the cause of suffering for the cow and the bull.
Okay. What makes you so sure? Why do you think that?
We understand Kali Yuga. It's an ocean of faults. Krishna has just departed. There's no strong leader to oppose the mischief mongers. There's people who are just dedicated to sense gratification, so therefore they exploit the body of the cow and the bull.
Okay, you said that, you know, Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, and but, you know, it's seen from the previous chapter that Bhumi was distressed because Krishna had left her. I mean, could it not just be that, you know, Kali is coincidental with the sufferings of the bull and the cow, and just sort of happened to come along at the same time? You know, I don't really see the connection between Kali appearing and the bull and the cow suffering. I mean, you know, he might make something, but it could be other things going on. And then if you consider that your dharma is Yamaraj himself, so he's a Mahajana, so then if Kali was really the cause of his suffering, then, you know, I'm sure he would have been able to ascertain it. You know, because it looks like you're taking the position that your supernatural powers are responsible for the effect. Kali is a superhuman personality, so that would fall in the category of considering, you know, supernatural forces to be responsible for good and bad. But Dharma himself points out that there are other plausible options. And he says supernatural powers they're kind of bound to reciprocate fruitive actions. So they're not all in all. The demigods have to reciprocate with what we do, so that would mean that, you know, what we do is in control. But then if you say that action, you know, causes everything, then action presupposes that there's a doer of the action, there's a sentient performer. So you could say that this whole ordeal that Dharma's going through is just in his mind. I mean, you know, he's there, he's done his activities, now he's getting the result, therefore whatever feelings he has in his mind, they're the cause of what he's going through. And then effectively we would be saying that Dharma is just a karmi, you know, steeped in illusion. But you know, Dharma's a great devotee, so how could you say that he's getting, you know, karmic reactions? So, you know, I can only say that there can be no material cause of the effect he's experiencing. And then all you're left with is, you know, Kali is just some random culprit who somehow has the authority to dish out suffering willy-nilly to whomever he likes, you know, whether they deserve it or not. And, you know, that means you're putting Kali in the position of God, but that's atheistic. Because, you know, we know that everything happens for a good reason. And, you know, to fire the blame at the agent of an effect is like smacking the pizza delivery boy because the cook put anchovies in your super deluxe when, you know, you specifically asked them not to.
Alright,
I mean, but then what made, you know, okay, it wasn't the pizza delivery guy's fault, you know, the cook did it, but, you know, what made the cook do it? You know?
Sounds like you're putting the reason for the suffering just down to karma or the laws of nature.
Yeah, yeah. And the agent is just, you know, the efficient cause, what we call the efficient cause or the apadana karna. You know, there have to be more primary causes behind the efficient cause that Kali's being. I don't think you can pin it all on Kali. There's something else going on behind him. Really, yeah.
So we understand that Kali is definitely a representative of the Lord, and his role is to deliver the reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And the reaction is our reaction. These other causes, they're very good arguments. They cover a lot of possibilities. But the Vaishnava conclusion is a little bit more subtle than that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay. What do you think I'm saying? Because I'm really confused. I kind of, you know, I have all these things going on in my head, and I can't quite get a grip on what my actual, you know, what do you think what I'm saying?
I'd agree, you know, that some of the
you've got, you know,
okay,
it's like, what am I saying?
You're saying there's so many different causes, and that the bull, Dharma, he's become bewildered. That he shouldn't become bewildered. He's a much more competent personality than that.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a higher arrangement, and that to identify, to put your finger mm-hmm. on the perpetrator of an irreligious act, means that you're also implicated. That you're not aware of the greater cause.
Yeah. That, you know, that pretty much sums it up. Yeah. Yeah, because
so you have to agree that there's an efficient cause
mm-hmm.
and the primary cause.
Okay.
The primary cause is the arrangement of the Lord. And he's not taking the responsibility for our reactions. He's giving the sanction so we can perform it. He gives us the ability so we can perform actions that will lead us to hell. He's reciprocating with us. And so Kali, his job is to help to rectify our mentality.
Mm-hmm.
So he's reciprocating and working as an agent of the Lord, reciprocating with our desires.
Okay. But you said there's a primary cause, and, you know, you're agreeing with me that there's a primary cause. But then I said there's the efficient cause, so the two seem to be different, so, you know.
Well, with your example of the pizza delivery man, he definitely didn't put the anchovies into your super deluxe.
Mm-hmm.
The cook did. Mm-hmm. But what inspired the cook?
Mm-hmm.
If he's a representative, it's a long chain. We're talking about that infinite regression, that something has happened in order to cause you to experience this suffering. So he's a representative. Is that okay?
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, another example.
Well, so you mean I could say the pizza guy gave me anchovies and that would be okay? You know, we could say that.
But you have to connect it to the other things. You can't just turn around and beat him up.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you another example. the American government starts to enter into negotiations with a Palestinian subcommittee. So does every member of the government file into the office for negotiations, or is it just one or two delegates?
Yeah, I guess you could say it's, you know, you have the ambassador and maybe, you know, a couple of his assistants, maybe.
Okay, so the U.S. ambassador has begun the negotiations. We're saying that, but he represents the government.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. It's like, you may say the U.S. ambassador has started negotiations, but, you know, we don't think, therefore, that he kind of, he's got his own little thing going on, and he happened to show up in Palestine and enter the room and say, hey, guys, I'm here, you know, I want to do my own little thing. No, he's doing it because it's his job. It's on behalf of someone else. But it's still okay for us to say, you know, it's the ambassador in there. We don't need to say it's the government doing the thing. Like that?
We can say like that. Mm-hmm. We understand that if you're looking in the Ford factory for Mr. Ford, he might not be there, but he is there by his energy. The Ford name, the Ford motive, the Ford everything. Mm-hmm. So, Kali would be the cause as representative of karma. Mm-hmm. And even if karma is not an issue, still the Lord is sanctioning all the events. So the devotee understands that and tolerates all kinds of misery, considering them to be God-sent. We were thinking that Dharma and the cow, they're suffering, but they're still composed enough in their mind to discuss and to offer prayers and to be properly situated. So the devotee, if they receive some nick on the finger, or they trip over, they immediately say, oh, I should have got a much greater reaction. This is Krishna's mercy. He's just given me a token reaction. So we have to conclude that the Lord's energies are inconceivable. This suffering, or apparent suffering of the cow and bull, have come about in order to prove that Maharaj Pariksit was the ideal executive head and that he knew well how to give protection to the cows and the Brahmins. Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, Kali would just be doing you know, God's work, doing Krishna's work. And then you have to consider how it is that Dharma is put into such a position that he doesn't remember. The ultimate cause. And
well, let me say that Arjuna, mm-hmm. Krishna's dear friend, was put into a similar position mm-hmm. in order for the Bhagavad Gita to be spoken. So his apparent bewilderment, which is obviously an influence of Yoga Maya, enabled Krishna to deliver these teachings of Bhagavad Gita. If the person forgets Krishna, then this is the influence of Mahamaya. But here we have Yogamaya. Kali is a representative of the Lord, and he's influencing the devotee so that this wonderful pastime can take place so we can understand what is the actual cause.
Yeah.
And we put it back down to, as stated in Bhagavatam, Tatenu kampam shushamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipakam vidvag vapubir ridadam namaste jiveta somukti yomukti padesa doyabhaka. Which means that one tolerates the suffering, understanding it's due to one's own sinful activities, and he continues to engage his mind, his intelligence, and his words in devotional service. By doing this, he becomes a fit candidate for liberation. It's his rightful claim. It's all down to your attitude.
Yeah.
No, hang on. This for later.
Hey, thanks.
You accept?
Yeah. Except, you know, I have this. I'm kind of wondering because in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, Kali, by the combination of the age of Kali and the effect of the material energy, this has, you know, magnified the effects, you know, to an immeasurable degree. And therefore Dharma was unable to, you know, pinpoint or to mention that the ultimate cause is the Lord. So I had a kind of question that whether or not Dharma was placed into illusion by the material energy in combination with Kali or purely by the Lord's Yoga Maya.
Does anybody want to present an answer on that?
Well, first of all, I want to applaud your presentation. Having done that, I have a criticism. I think, as I was following this argument, I think that our dear Shanti Parayan made somewhat of a blunder in the very beginning. I can't quote word for word what you said, but you did make the point that there is nobody present to enforce Dharma, something to that effect.
There's no qualified leader.
Yeah, there was something to that effect. And yet, that is the crux of the Siddhanta, you know, of the conclusion. So what you sort of did was you undermined the conclusion that we're trying to come to through these five stages. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of sort of threw the whole discussion for a loop a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did appreciate the give and take. I thought that David made some... You played a very good role. But I think, Shanti, you kind of weakened your ability to reply, because the whole point of this actually is to show that without someone like Maharaj Parikshit, then there's going to be, yes, so many difficulties in figuring out what's going on. Because you do have personified religion, Dharma, becoming bewildered. He's first of all suffering. That's already a major, you know, for people who are looking for excuses not to believe in God, that's something they jump right on. That here's a really pious entity, Dharma actually, although he's in the form of a bull, he actually represents the best of Brahminical culture. And he's being beaten by a Shudra, and three of his legs are gone. And then there's poor Bhumi, and she's weeping. She's in distress. On top of it, all of this distress and the very influence of the presence of this personality of Kali in the form of a degraded Shudra. I mean, you can actually imagine this psychologically. In the form of such a very reprehensible person who is, you know, beating violently, and you can imagine his whole attitude, you know, laughing sarcastically and probably making different nasty remarks. So this would have a bewildering effect on the personality of Dharma, and therefore he wasn't able to really pinpoint why this was happening, except to say, I was actually talking with a devotee just a couple days ago, and he was remarking how quickly in ISKCON devotees are ready to, anything strange that happens, they're ready to say, oh, it's just a leela. You know? And that sort of becomes a kind of, you know, superficial mantra, you know. It's not really explaining anything, it's just, you know, something you say to move beyond, you know, to move ahead in the conversation to the next point. So he didn't want to do that. Because he is Dharma, he's the best of best representative of Brahminical culture, so he wasn't about to just say, oh, this is just a lila, in other words, it's all up to the Lord. He's arranged this, so he didn't want to say that. But because of the terrifying, bewildering situation and the disagreements of various philosophies which were becoming prominent at that time in Kali Yuga, and also for the fact that it is, as already been pointed out, that it is just as impious to accuse someone of being the doer of an impious act as it is to be the doer of the impious act. You see, because that came out in your discussion, that there is always some higher background cause to these things. We just can't say, you know, you can see it. It's immediately obvious that a person has a very selfish, self-centered, and actually nasty attitude if he points to someone else in the world and said, if it wasn't for this problem, this person, if this person could just be removed from existence, then I'd have no more problems in my life. I mean, that's, you know, a pretty a pretty abominable position to take. So the bull didn't want to take that position. He didn't want to say it's all down to Kali. But because you had sort of undercut the position, you know, the actual role of the intended role of Maharaj Parikshit, I think that weakened your position. Because actually, yes, this all was arranged by the Lord in all of these ways that were pointed out, but for the purpose of showing that Maharaj Parikshit was the one person who is capable of subduing Kali and restoring the bull dharma and the cow bhumi to, you know, their safe and sheltered position that they should be under proper Kshatriya rule. So, yes.
So by introducing that element that allows people to harbour that doubt that Kali Yuga is not conquerable, as Srila Prabhupada, he says in the purports that if we just follow in the footsteps of Maharaj Parikshit and we're prepared with the sword to chastise and control this, then it can be counteracted. And he recommends the Sankirtan Jagat.
Yes.
So by, it's that argument that it's just Kali Yuga, it's just all pastimes that,
yeah,
that lend strength to that angle.
Yeah.
It means you have to control the doubts, control the, you know, control it much more, not to.
Well, it's obvious in this structure that, you know, you want to come to conclusion with Siddhanta.
Mm-hmm.
So the one who's, and that in this case it's you, who's going to argue the Siddhanta in his strategy, he has to keep that strongly in his mind,
mm-hmm.
You know. That means wherever it's advantageous during the discussion, you refer to that, you bring it up, you know, and that's what I mean. That was practically the first thing I noticed, is that you sort of undercut the Siddhanta by this remark you made. And then at the end you just sort of, you know, like pulling a rabbit out of the hat. Maharaj Parikshit was there too, you know, but it didn't quite come off. That was my impression.
Yeah, I think I was trying to give that as a symptom of the age of Kali and say it in a general sense.
Uh-huh.
But in this instance, it was referring back to...
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, it was a little bewildered because the thesis is that the age of Kali is the cause, but his conclusion wasn't elaborating on how Kali is the cause. And so somehow or another, his thesis got seriously adjusted by his doubts, where it, in accommodating it, it's kind of like it made a, you know, it means a it came to a synthesis, but it changed. It wasn't that you synthesized the other ones into yours. It was a matter of his became adjusted by that and came up with something, which is fine. I'm just saying it should be clear that that's kind of what happened.
Yeah.
You know, that he made his statement, he had his doubts, and then by the discussion, then they came to a correct conclusion. But actually, it would be natural in a discussion to come like that if the two are like seeking, like that. So then that was like good, because then by through the discussion they came to, they appreciated each other's points and they came to a final conclusion. But if he was making a statement trying to establish that, you know, like if you were giving a lecture or something, you wouldn't want to do that. You know, you would want to, in your fourth part, your synthesis, to show how the other person, what they're saying is already included in yours, but they didn't have the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. Like that. And so your statement mm-hmm. is still correct. But now you're because they're the particular audience, you are accommodating their need or their perspective into yours. You know, so then it becomes part of your thing. But here it becomes your statement is actually, means the conclusion is actually, because in the end you're not saying that it's Kali. You know, you're not saying therefore Kali is actually the cause. But you know, it's, you know, through the Lord's arrangement and everything like this, but he's the one that's doing it. You know, if that's what you want to bring out. And he said, what do you call it? You have the efficient cause and you have the
material cause. Primary cause.
Primary.
Yeah.
So he is the efficient is the one that gets it done.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. So means so in other words, we're saying he's the cause of the suffering, the cow and the fall. But you have the doubt that, well, actually he's not, it's all this other thing. But it has to come through something. So he is the efficient cause. But, yes, granted, there is the primary cause. And it's the Lord coming through the devotees. And in doing that, he's proving that Parikkhita Maharaj is the proper one to, you know, correct the what's wrong and get the Lord's work done. So in other words, the Lord's getting the work done through Kali as the agent. But he coming in is actually correcting that and bringing it to action what the Lord wants. So that's the synthesis, is that the Lord is there, but you're still making your stand that he is the efficient cause. He is standing there, and, you know, he's got the thing by the application of force of his club or whatever. The legs are not functioning or not there. So that's there. But at the same time, as then you're accommodating the bigger picture, just that you are just making the statement that Kali is the one that's beating the legs. And then he's going from the purport to no, even Dharma is bewildered, and it's actually him. You know, he says maybe it just happened. You know, he just happened to be swinging his club and that, and he just happened to not have any legs, and just the moment that Parikkhita Maharaj came, they just happened to bump into each other. You know, you know, I'm not meaning to shoot you, but you know, the gun is pointing. Your head happens to be standing in line with where I'm going to shoot my bullet. You know, so yeah, so it's like, so it could have been like, because he brought that up, but you have to prove no. Kali was the efficient cause, but actually there is this whole arrangement of the Lord behind it. One, it's just karma, because he brought up karma. And Maharaj is saying you just seem to be discussing karma, you're not getting it to your conclusion and not connecting it to your... Because when you say Kali, you're not really talking to karma so much, not on his level, the metaphysics. You're talking to just what is going to be corrupt but the whole thing of where it came from and all that, then he's bringing up that doubt. So what Maharaj was saying is that you have to keep in mind that this is what you're trying to establish. You're bringing all that. You have to take what he's saying and all that and not undermine that. You know, because as soon as he makes his doubt, because you're not going to speak more until he's spit in his doubt. You've made your point. Then he speaks, then you can understand, oh, okay, so he's caught, he's doubt, because he's looking at it from the metaphysical. I was simply stating the physical. But by his metaphysical, then it brings out, but even his metaphysical is wrong. Because it's actually, it goes behind to the Lord. Does that make any sense? Mm-hmm. So then he's satisfied because he's been accommodated. And this way you did make adjustment, that you didn't change your thesis. While in here, the way you presented it, as Mark pointed out, you already removed, your thesis is not, your conclusion is not actually connected to your thesis. Because at the end you didn't say that Kali is, he's beating, but actually it's the Lord's plan and this and that. Is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it goes together because if the point about Maharaj, you know, that this is, yes, the Lord's behind this, but for the purpose of demonstrating that only a king like Maharaj Parikshit can bring order to, you know, this time of Kali Yuga, only then can you actually present Kali as the cause, because this is what the Lord is doing. The Lord is making Kali the cause to show that Parikshit is the one who can subdue Kali. If you undercut Parikshit, then all you've got is Kali, you know, doing his thing, and everyone scratching their head and wondering why this is happening. And this was the point I was making before, that this is really food for the crows. I mean, those who want to decry that there actually is a God and, you know, things that happen in the world are supposed to teach us, you know, we're supposed to learn an elevating lesson from it. They, you know, they can decry that. No, what is this? You have these two personalities, and they're being attacked by this rascal, and nothing can be done about it. Nobody knows why. It's just, you know, and then they come to this chaotic conclusion that things just happen.
So therefore, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you know that.
You kind of end up with that existential
current expression they have. Two-word expression. The second word is happens. The first word is not polite to say. But that's how they sum it up.
What's it in here is that would be you've made your statement. He's made his statement. Because in other words, what you're means. Either you're presenting your statement and the other person's not there, so you'll bring up points that others may come up with. And then, so you're just keeping your line and then just showing. Mm-hmm. Or it's, he's there, he's making his statement, your statement. The reason he's satisfied is because you've included his statement in yours. But it's your statement, so your statement hasn't changed. But possibly the presentation, the application has changed because the conclusion you have to bring into practical application. And then that's what Myers is making is, otherwise it's just discussion, you know, for crows. I mean, what's the point? Okay, he is the cause, so what? What are you trying to prove by that? If he's the cause, then he's the cause meaning he's the element through which the Lord is arranging the material energy. The living entity has material desires. They want to fulfill them. So you have fully pious living entities, pretty much pious, basically pious, and basically not so pious. So Kali is the instrument for fulfilling the desires of the, you know, basically not so pious. You know, but still there's a whole thing. But that's not what the Lord wants. The Lord wants you to become God conscious. So the solution is good government. The good governance will correct these things that the people, in other words, if you live like the people in Satya Yuga, you get the same result. And the reason people get the Kali Yuga result in Kali Yuga is because they live like that. They become influenced by it. But if you live according to Satya Yuga, you don't suffer. Because you have these higher understandings. It's the Lord and His energy. So it's happening, but it doesn't bother you. You know, that's all. Does that make sense? So you have to be able to hold your line, but not stubborn, because the point is he's making valid points. He's making bogus points, then it's stubborn, you know, determined. But if he's making, then it's to bring in and that, because they're supposed to come to an understanding that you can apply. It's not just an argument. It's not winning an argument. You know, it's not just talking just to talk, you know, just for, you know, for... academics, they'll just, you know, suppose, or, you know, just for interest's sake, just to keep the conversation going, you know, to titillate their, you know, vast intelligence with something interesting, you know, over there, beer, you know, you know, like that.
We keep your goal in mind.
Yeah, that's the whole point, is because that's what Mars is making, is in your, when you gave your reasons, your hate to, you already lost your conclusions. So you have to have that consistency through, like that. And depending upon, you could make this statement to 20 different people, and you probably, your presentation would be slightly different at the end, depending on what you want to emphasize. So here is because it's the Lord's energy. He brought up a thing about all these others. So the Lord's energies is brought out, or the actual connection to this. He's the cause of the suffering. Therefore, to remove suffering, we have to have a proper being. You know, like that. So, you know, like that. So.
But I congratulate the two of you.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's well done. Because this is new. It's a matter of getting used to just. Because we're not used to thinking logically, because they don't. Because according to the Vedic standard, the first thing you teach the children is stuff like math, logic, philosophy, you know, things like that. And history, because history is seen in connection to the Lord and the energies and all that. In other words, the first thing you're learning is science. And once the intelligence is therefore developed, so you see through that. Mm-hmm. But as a human, he's not meant just for science, he's meant for rasa. Then you bring the mind into that field, because you're only going to get out of here with that intelligence. You know, you're going to dissolve the material energy through intelligence. The Nishkam Karma Yoga means with intelligence. Buddha Yoga is with intelligence. Unless, of course, you're very fortunate, your attachments are so pure and great, that you just transmit from one attachment to the other. You know, it's like that, what's it, that servant. He eventually became a servant of Ramanujacharya. Ramanujacharya was making a point about how anybody can surrender to the Lord or take up that. And the sannyasi disciples were pointing out, they were amused by this very, he was a wrestler, big, huge guy, and he was carrying this umbrella, and always very careful that the sun never fell on this girl. And he's just looking at her face, just completely looking and all that. Big festival, everyone else is watching the deity and everything else, and he's just watching this girl. And so I think there was a comment made that you may be able to, a guy like this, how can you save a guy like this? No, everybody can say. So he said, call him over here. So they call him over. And he asked him, why are you, you know, taking, you know, making so much effort? Everything else is at the festival and you're taking care of this girl. Like that. And he says, well, actually, I'm a worshiper of beauty. Like that. So this girl is the most beautiful girl I've come across, so therefore, I'm appreciating and serving that beauty, you know. Like that. So Ramanuja says, so if I show you something more beautiful, you'll worship that. Oh yeah, definitely. So then he took him in front of Sri Rangaji. And then, you know, by his blessings, then he could appreciate his beauty, so then he took up and became a very serious. He married the girl. But like that, so they became, but they were dedicated to serving. So if you can do that, that's good. But the point we're making is that the intelligence develops, so the field is intelligence. Then you apply it, then you take it a step further, you know, that human element of the mind. So then you bring in the arts, because that refines. So with intelligence, then the arts are used. Problem with the modern education, when you come in from the beginning, everything's arts. And they don't actually start teaching you logic and thinking until, you know, if you're lucky at secondary education, they bring it in at some point. But it's not that if you take an art line, they leave you in the arts. But the Vedic is you don't study the arts without having first gotten a foothold on science, you know, logic. Intelligence. So, therefore, it will take a little while for us to adjust this, because we're not used to just taking, I have this point, I'm getting to that point and do it. Because it either comes out very dry, so it's socially unacceptable, you know, or we just don't have that understanding because we never were exposed to it. Now, even if you do a little logical thinking, it's just a subject. It's not how you should think and behave. That makes sense? So, like Maharaj said, when we first introduced it, it'll take a little time to get used to it. But once you do, then you see it's very, very clear. Just things connect very, very nicely.
So, precious one. Now these are stapled?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I just distributed.
They're distributed.
They've been distributed.
Okay. So in the last 13 minutes.
Yeah, we should stop.
Thank you.
Well, 18 what? Pratigya, solemn statement of purpose. Is entitled Maharaj Pratigya cursed by a Brahmin boy is expressed in verses 2-4. Maharaj Pratigya was always consciously surrendered to the personality of Godhead, and therefore he was neither afraid nor overwhelmed by fear due to a snake bird which was to bite him because of the fury of a Brahmin boy. After leaving all his associates, the king surrendered himself as a disciple to the son of Vyas, Sukadev Goswami, and thus he was able to understand the actual position of the personality of Godhead. This was so because those who have dedicated their lives to the transcendental topics of the personality of Godhead, of whom the Vedic hymns sing, and who are constantly engaged in remembering the lotus feet of the Lord, do not run the risk of having misconceptions even at the last moment of their lives. Then, Vritti, commentary. Regarding the qualities of Maharaj Pratigya, verses 2 and 3 of the Pratigya, glorify Maharaj Pratigya's fearlessness and renunciation. These qualities evince his rasa for hearing the topics of Sri Krishna. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates in Bhaktisandarbha, Anucheda 250, part 4 of the Anucheda. As a parasol bearer follows a king, so renunciation follows these descriptions of the Lord. In Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.3 it is stated, Nigama kalpa taror galitam phalam sukha mukhad amrita dravya samyutam pipeta bhagavatam rasamalayam muhuraho rasika bhuvi bhavaka. O expert and thoughtful men, relish Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of the Vedic literatures. It emanated from the lips of Sri Sukadev Goswami. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarian juice, rasam, was already relishable for all, including liberated souls. Mimesha. Anuman, or reasoned observations upon the above. The fruit of the Vedic tree is juicy and with the sweetest essence of that tree, an essence identical to the Lord himself. Some branches of the tree of Vedic Shastra are analyzed as material, others as quote-unquote spiritual. Shruti Shastra, like a tree, is most liberal in that it offers shelter to all sentient beings. According to where they take shelter, under the many spreading branches of Shruti Shastra, sentient beings gather unto different classes, sattvic, rajasic, tamasic, liberated, and bound. But the fruit of the Vedic tree, Srimad Bhagavatam, is the transcendental nectar. By the word transcendental, the term vastu, reality, is meant. Hence, the very second verse of this book declares, Atra paramo nirmat saranam satam vedyam vastavam atra vastu. Therefore, for those devotees pure in heart, the supreme vastu is realizable as it really is. Sri Krishna has more to say about Vastu in Bhagavatam 11.11.1. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Badho mukta hi vyakhya gunato me na vastuta gunasya maya mulatvan na me moksho na bandhanam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Uddhava, due to the influence of the material modes of nature, which are under my control, the living entity is sometimes designated as conditioned and sometimes as liberated. In fact, however, the soul is never really navastuta, bound up or liberated. And since I am the Supreme Lord of Maya, which is the cause of the modes of nature, I also am never to be considered liberated or in bondage. Therefore, the juice of the fruit of the Srimad Bhagavatam is relishable for all, no matter if one comes under the Vedic classification of Baddha,
materially conditioned soul, or mukta, liberated soul. Both of these states are navastuta, since they exist only as designations of the modes of nature. Neither are states of ultimate reality. The soul, baddha, or mukta, achieves relish for the fruit. Divine qualities automatically follow his taste. The kshatriya qualities of fearlessness and renunciation, wherever the Vedas teach them, prior to the soul's gaining taste for the fruit of Srimad Bhagavatam, may be considered material products of the mode of passion. But Maharaj Parikshit's fearlessness and renunciation are different. They follow his taste for hearing the descriptions of the Lord. Indeed, they offer service to that taste. As a parasol bearer follows the king, unquote, so writes Srila Jiva Goswami. Thus, renunciation became a sthayi bhava, supportive mood of Shantarasa. All this is indicated in parts 1 to 3 of this Anuchana, 250 of Bhakti Sandarbha, where Srila Jiva Goswami quotes two verses from Canto 12 and cites the commentary of Sridhar Goswami. Yeah, so just one on here is that these points are there in the second and third. Means the third is the situation. But the second, he's not afraid. But that's because, so what's being pointed out here, Maharaj is bringing out, is that it's because of his taste for the transcendental qualities. So the principle is one who has the taste for the Lord's, you know, name, form, qualities, and pastimes, they are undisturbed by the material energy. That's what is coming up. But what's being pointed out is that it's so perfect, the Bhagavatam, that's why it's the supreme literature, is even those who are approaching it from the other direction, that they're coming in and they don't like impiety, that they're taking up piety, they're taking up path of knowledge, or they're taking up the path of renunciation. Still, even then, because of that endeavor, if they connect that to the Lord, they will get result. Because the Lord will, it's an approach. You have to approach someone some way. So if you don't know them, then you may approach them formally. You know, something come up and have we met before? I know you, or, you know, something. You make something. But if you know the person, then that affection is the thing. It doesn't have to go through this formality. But in any case, the interaction with the person is what you want. Right? So that's why the Vedic literature is so perfect, that everybody can approach the Lord. And that's the point that Bhagavatam making, is there's no other purpose to the Vedic literatures than to approach the Lord. But since you are more absorbed in medicine than in God, everything anybody does, it's good for them or not, and anything they eat or any activity, it's always some medicinal point. Then you can approach God through your medicine. Because then you learn how it goes back to the modes, how Krishna's control, how the thing, the whole psychology. You'll get back to the Lord if you actually understand the point. Otherwise, you can get bewildered and distracted, yes. But the whole point is just like the Lord's toes are very effulgent. So you could sit and look at his toenails all day. But you could go, you know, these are nice toenails, so, you know, then who's the person that's got these nice toenails? So you could look up and see the Lord. Does that make some sense? Like that. So here then, Maharaj has brought this out very nicely with Jiva Goswami's commentary. Yeah. Then here he's making in here, this is renunciation becomes a sthayi bhava support. So this is 1, 2, and 3 of the Anucheda. 1. Hearing about the transcendental qualities of the Lord is described in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 12.3, 14-15. I have related to you the narrations of all these great kings who spread their fame throughout the world and then departed. My real purpose was to teach transcendental knowledge and renunciation. Stories of kings lend power and opulence to these narrations, but do not in themselves constitute the ultimate aspect of knowledge. Right? So history is not just for the history. History is that there's something to learn there. The point is great kings have come and gone. So then, what's your big pride and everything? You know, Prabhupada, the example he gave, the example is that big, you know, managers of the society, I mean the best managers of society, were having some problem managing India in the early days. And then another manager, who was a good manager, but he was a good temple manager. He was like, ran probably the best temple in the movement at that time. But it was a temple, not a zone. So then he was talking about, yeah, you know, maybe, you know, because the place was, oh, maybe I could do, and I could do this and that, and so many things. Then Prabhupada said, the big horses have come to the raging river, and in trying to cross, they've been swept away. And now the skinny horse is coming and trying to judge, well, yeah, I could do this, and I could get across. So that's the point, is that the histories are there, they're for a point, is that kings bigger have come and gone. So therefore, why should we be worried? You've lost the kingdom here. The Yayati, you know, had, you know, he was even, had more. And all these other great kings, and they were going to the heavenly planets, and still they lost everything. So we might as well become, how you say, detached and learn the ultimate knowledge. 2. The person who desires pure devotional service to Lord Krishna should hear the narrations of Lord Uttama Shloka's glorious qualities, the constant chanting of which destroys everything inauspicious. The devotee should engage in such listening in regular daily assemblies and should also continue his hearing throughout the day. 3. Srila Sridhar Swami comments, in this verse the speaker describes the dynasties of the great kings. However, he does this with the desire to speak, vivakshya, about transcendental knowledge, vijnan, and renunciation, vaivajya. Elaborate descriptions, vacho vibhuti, of departed pareyusham kings are not the ultimate aspect of knowledge, paramartyam. In the next verse, the words nityam and abhikshnam means every day. Because it's, all we have to do is hear. Constant hearing and chanting the Lord's name, form, quality, past tense is all that we want to do. But because we can't do that by taste, we don't have an interest, therefore the Vedic literatures give us alternative things that we can fulfill our taste, but they will bring us to the stage of hearing and chanting. That's all. You know, it's just like, okay, we should fast on Ekadasi by not eating anything, just drinking water. Okay, great. I do that. I have no problems doing that. I chant my rounds. I do my service. No problem. Someone else, they can't. And because they don't eat, they're weak, they do no service, they're disturbed all day, so then eat. Right? So because the point is to do service. The point isn't to fast. You know, the fasting has a purpose. So hearing and chanting is so we're absorbed in the Lord, develop love for the Lord. We're not interested in hearing and chanting because we don't have a taste and we're not an academic. So therefore you find another alternative material activity that's going to connect you. That by performing that it won't distract you. Just like eating, it's a fast day, which means no eating. But you're fasting and accomplishing the purpose of the fast. But it's a lower level, because that time that you're eating and all that, you could be doing some other service. Because on this day, it's other services that you're emphasizing, not the eating. Eating is service, but it's not. Does that make sense? So you're taking a lower. So then someone, okay, they just take fruit and milk. Someone can't do that, okay, then they're taking whatever it is, cook whatever you like, just no grains. You know, or you just, okay, then just eat once a day. You can't do that? Okay, eat twice. You can't eat all day. Hey, but just do your service. You know, does that make sense? So that's how the Vedic literature is. This is the tree that is being brought out. That's why we don't become proud, because someone's in one position, someone's in another. It doesn't matter. Whether you're in the forest or whether you're in the house, as long as you're absorbed in Krishna, who cares? We're not trying to be the perfect sannyasis, the perfect... No, we're trying to remember Krishna.
Does that make sense?
Okay. So we'll end here. Just one note is that we discussed yesterday is that the appendix, because it a lot of times reiterates what's in the main body of the text, but it's bringing it out for your understanding that these are very important, either main points or nice side points that are brought out, because they're brought out here because you know where they are. Those should be read through yourself. We won't discuss them in the class as such. But when we get to the appendix, we will ask if anyone has any questions from their reading of it. Then we'll address it. If there's no questions, we won't address it. We'll go on to the next chapter. If there is, then we'll address it. Does that make sense? That way we can easily save sometimes 1-2 days.
Unless discussing a chapter. Something that's particularly significant.
Yeah. If they're significant, if we want to, we'll bring it out because we feel it's very, very important. But if not, then if you have something that you didn't understand or you felt was important, then we'll discuss it. But otherwise, we'll try to make it move a little bit quicker. Is that okay? So that's that. Srila Prabhupada ki, Sarvaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki, Rainita Gaura Premanandi. Hey, this is starting, this is...
Huh?
This is pit and painted.
What?
Pit and painted. Painted.
Painted?
Your comments.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. 18th chapter.
This is the bus. The bus.
Yeah.
No, this is good. I mean, if we can do it, you do the rest of the thing. Like, it means you go through and then you go back and upgrade this. And then it's like, we won't have to worry about the devotees wearing clothes. We'll already be born on.
I would say
one other thing you could do that would make it more clear or make it is the particular, the solemn statement. Just give just the statement, and then like this, it's expressed in these verses, and you say what the statement is, and then bring it out so that even in that.